You're listening to a recording provided for the use of the blind and print-impaired. Materials or items read on Airs LA are the copyright property of the original authors and publishers. No unauthorized use or duplication is permitted. Hello, I'm Michael Piotrasch. Welcome to another recording of articles from Popular Science magazine, a presentation of Airs LA. This week's articles include, at 59 seconds, Trojans of all classes enjoyed a nice jug of wine. At 5 minutes 58 seconds, the sun has literally set on the British Empire. And finally, at 9 minutes 46 seconds, why don't we remember being a baby? New clues in memory mystery. Let's get to it. This first article is from the Science Archaeology section and is entitled, Trojans of All Classes Enjoyed a Nice Jug of Wine. Written by Andrew Paul, published March 27, 2025. Cups dating back to 2500 BCE show the drink wasn't just for gods and epic heroes. This article begins with a photo. Its caption reads, Depas Goblet, excavated by Heinrich Schliemann, 15 centimeters high, collection of classical archaeology, University of Tübingen. Homer's Iliad recounts one of history's greatest legendary epics. It also describes a round of drinks shared by the gods and goddesses of Mount Olympus. Quote, Hephaestus spoke, then stood up, passed a double goblet across to his dear mother. As he spoke, the white-armed goddess Hera smiled, unquote, Homer writes. Quote, she reached for her son's goblet. He poured the drink, going from right to left for all the other gods, drawing off sweet nectar from the mixing bowl, unquote. It doesn't take long for the deities to soon begin laughing, quote, irrepressibly, unquote, while, quote, all that day they dined until sunset, unquote. In the end, quote, no one's heart went unsatisfied, unquote. According to recent analysis of ancient relics recovered from the real ruins of Troy, wine wasn't restricted to Greek divinity and wealthy humans. It was likely enjoyed by everyday residents, too. The new findings, published in the April edition of the American Journal of Archaeology, also further support a long-standing theory that Homer based the Iliad on actual historical events. The ruins of Troy were rediscovered over 150 years ago by a German businessman and amateur archaeologist named Heinrich Schliemann. Among the artifacts Schliemann recovered in present-day Hisarlik, Turkey, were a number of slender, two-handled drinking vessels made from clay. Experts have since excavated over 100 of these depas goblets from Trojan dig sites, which date back to 2500 to 2000 BCE. More have also been found across the Aegean, Asia Minor, and Mesopotamia. Each depas goblet measured roughly 4.7 to 15.75 inches tall and can hold between 0.25 and 1 liter of liquid. Today, the University of Tübingen in Germany's Classical Archaeology Collection contains one depas goblet and two vessel fragments from Schliemann's original excavations. At the time, Schliemann believed depas goblets were used for communal celebrations similar to those described in the Iliad, but without modern chemical analysis methods, his hypothesis could not be tested. That recently changed thanks to a collaborative team from the universities of Tübingen, Bonn, and Jena. After milling a 2-gram sample from each of the two vessel fragments, researchers heated them to 716 degrees Fahrenheit and analyzed the mixture with Grass chromatography and mass spectrometry equipment. Two types of molecules stuck out in the results, succinic and pyruvic acid. Quote, they only occur when grape juice ferments, so now we can state with confidence that wine was actually drunk from the depas goblets and not just grape juice, unquote, study co-author Maxime Ragiot at the University of Bonn said in an accompanying statement. Depas goblets weren't everyday items, however. Wine was the most expensive drink available during the Bronze Age and the majority of recovered goblets have been found in palaces and temples. Experts previously believed this implied that wine consumption was primarily relegated to societal elites. But in their same study, researchers also conducted a similar analysis of common Trojan cups found outside the city's central complex. Those results also proved wine was more accessible than researchers once thought. Quote, "These vessels also contained wine," unquote, confirmed study co-author Stephen Bloom from the University of Tübingen. Quote, "So it is clear that wine was an everyday drink for the common people too," unquote. Just how often middle and lower class residents of Troy drank wine remains unclear, but with the latest findings, historians and archaeologists now know that fermented grapes weren't only reserved for the likes of Hera and Hector. This next article is from the Science, Space, Solar System, Sun section and is entitled, "The Sun Has Literally Set on the British Empire," written by Andrew Paul, published March 21, 2025. The spring equinox helps conclude a major chapter in world history. This article begins with a photo of sunset at Buckingham Palace. Its caption reads, "The sun will officially set on the Empire at 9:50 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on March 21st. Quote, "The sun never sets on the British Empire," unquote. Variations on the phrase have been used for more than 200 years to describe the scope and power of the nation and its occupied territories. But from a logistical standpoint, Britain gave up the centuries-long imperial distinction last October when it reached an agreement to return the Chagos Islands to Mauritius. It was a long time coming for the Chagosians, many of whom have worked for decades to regain control of the island. A joint statement issued between both countries in October vowed the deal helped to, quote, "address wrongs of the past and demonstrate the commitment of both parties to support the welfare of Chagosians," unquote. Technically speaking, however, sunlight continued to shine on at least one portion of British-occupied land for about another 6 months. The primary holdout? A section of the British Antarctic Territory, including the Pitcairn Islands, that experiences perpetual sunlight 6 months out of the year. But thanks to cosmic geometry, a major chapter in world history has just now come to a close. As first highlighted last year on Reddit, the spring equinox on March 20 marked the sun's passage over the celestial equator, kicking off half a year of darkness around the South Pole. And given last year's deal with Mauritius, this means Thursday night at 10:50 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 2:50 a.m. on March 21st in London, the sun finally, literally set on the British Empire. There is an additional photo of a world map with shaded middle region indicating night. Its caption reads, "The spring equinox on March 20th preceded the British Empire's literal sunset." It didn't stay dark for Britain too long, however. About an hour after dusky conditions on the Pitcairn Islands, light began to peek over the horizon roughly 10,000 miles away in Akrotiri and Dhekelia, two non-contiguous British territories located on the island of Cyprus. Meanwhile, Britain is still maintaining a presence at a military base on the Chagos Archipelago's Diego Garcia Island as part of the 2024 agreement. Britain isn't the first or last culture with enough global territory to qualify for the "Sun Never Sets" moniker. Similar solar-based expansionist sentiments date as far back as the Egyptian, Mesopotamian, Persian, and Roman empires. The phrase, quote, "the empire on which the sun never sits," unquote, was first used in reference to the Spanish Empire under the 16th century Habsburg reign of King Charles I, also known as Charles V of the Holy Roman Empire. Beginning in the 20th century, similar titles were frequently used to describe the United States. If nothing else, empires may rise and fall, but the sun will outlast them all, at least for about another 5 billion years. This final article is from the Science Biology section and is entitled, "Why Don't We Remember Being a Baby? New Clues in Memory Mystery," written by Andrew Paul, published March 20, 2025. They may still exist, but we still don't know how to unlock them. This article begins with a photo of a father teaching a baby how to walk in a living room. Its caption reads, "Babies may start forming memories within the first few months of their lives." What's the earliest memory you can recall? While many people's recollections of the past may stretch back into childhood, research shows that the trip down memory lane generally hits a wall once you reach infancy. In some ways, this doesn't make much sense. After all, the first years of a baby's life are when they learn foundational psychological concepts, form relationships with caregivers, and gain a sense of self. Experts have long attributed this infant amnesia to the development timeline of the hippocampus, the region of the brain responsible for retaining memories. But according to new evidence from a team at Yale University, the explanation for our early memory blocks may be a bit more complicated. Humans generate memories during their very first months of life, but where do those memories go? Researchers detailed their work in a study published March 20th in the journal Science. To begin their experiment, scientists showed infants a series of new images before later testing to see if they remembered them. Recognizing an image from the past is an example of an episodic memory. As an adult, these can take the form of remembering specific events like watching a sports match or taking a vacation. But judging episodic memory capabilities is more difficult when there is a pretty obvious communication barrier between adults and a bunch of babies. Quote, "The hallmark of episodic memories is that you can describe them to others, but that's off the table when you're dealing with pre-verbal infants," unquote, Nick Turk Brown, a psychology professor, director of the Yale Wu Tsai Institute, and study senior author said in an accompanying statement. Instead of trying to learn baby talk, the team recorded hippocampal activity during both test phases using functional magnetic resonance imaging, fMRI. The results showed that an infant appeared more likely to remember an image if the hippocampus activated more during the first exposure. They also examined a baby's physical cues for further confirmation. Quote, "When babies have seen something just once before, we expect them to look at it more when they see it again," unquote, Turk Brown said. So in this task, if an infant stares at the previously seen image more than the new one next to it, that can be interpreted as the baby recognizing it as familiar, unquote. Infant behavior corresponded to their fMRI scans. A more active hippocampus while first looking at an image meant a baby looked at it longer when they saw it again later. Meanwhile, the posterior portion of the hippocampus that lit up is the same region associated with an adult's episodic memory banks. The strongest evidence came from infants who were 12 or more months old, indicating a timeline of how the brain develops in these first few years. Previous work by Turk Brown's team already revealed babies exhibit what's known as statistical learning even earlier, around 3 months old. While an episodic memory has specificity, statistical learning relates to more holistic concepts, such as understanding what a building looks like or which traditions are celebrated on certain holidays. Each one relies on separate neuronal pathways in the hippocampus. Combined with their latest findings, researchers are better understanding the progression from a baby's earlier statistical learning formations to the development of episodic memories. According to Turk Brown, this makes a great deal of sense. Quote, "Statistical learning is about extracting the structure in the world around us. This is critical for the development of language, vision, concepts, and more," unquote, he said. Quote, "So it's understandable why statistical learning may come into play earlier than episodic memory," unquote. But the larger question still remains. What happens to these earliest memories? Turk Brown believes there are multiple possible explanations, including the theory that those recollections simply never make it to the long-term storage regions of the brain. However, the study's senior author thinks another reason is more likely. Those memories remain encoded in our brains, but we simply can't access them. That's what the team hopes to explore in the future. Quote, were working to track the durability of hippocampal memories across childhood and even beginning to entertain the radical, almost sci-fi possibility that they may endure in some form into adulthood, despite being inaccessible, unquote, Turk Brown said. Well, that brings us to the end of this week's material from Popular Science magazine. I'm Michael Piotrasz, and I'll be back soon with more interesting articles. Thank you for listening.